I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Tracy Thomas, your host here at The Stacks. This week is our The Stacks Book Club conversation with Lauren Finella, who was also our guest last week. If you haven't listened yet, definitely go back and check it out. Lauren has some amazing book recommendations for you, so definitely check it out. This week, she and I are talking about Michael Poore's book, Reincarnation Blues. It's a book about a fictionalized world of reincarnation. And it's pretty cool. It's sci-fi, magical realism, craziness. So that's what we're going to be talking about. But before we get there, also, please make sure you subscribe to this show. I ask you every week, please subscribe, please rate and review. I know it seems like such a little thing, but honestly, I wouldn't ask if it didn't go a long way. So if you could take the time to write a review or to rate the show or anything like that, tell your friends, tell your family, I would be so, so appreciative. If you're looking for another way to support what we do here, there's a website called Patreon. It allows our listeners to support the work that we do, help us keep the lights on, help us keep the website up, help us to create great content. It's called Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/thestacks, you can contribute to this show. In exchange, you get exclusive access and insights into the show, including, and this is exciting, we're working on our fall book. So November, December, January. So I guess that's winter too. And our Patreon Stack Packs members are going to get first dibs on helping suggest the books for the show. So if you join the Stacks Pack, if you go to patreon.com/thestacks, you get to have a little say in that. So please do that. Check it out. We are forever, forever grateful to anybody who can help support the show. So thank you in advance. Now, something that I wanted to talk about before we dive into the show, which is totally unrelated to sponsors or Patreon or even the episode, is negative reviews. This weekend, author Celeste Ng talked about negative reviews. Celeste is the author of both Everything I Never Told You as well as Little Fires Everywhere. She's pretty popular right now. And she brought up on Twitter about negative reviews, about people tagging authors in their reviews and also people not writing negative reviews because why bother if you didn't like the book? It's not doing any good, more or less. And you know, I feel very passionately about negative reviews. I personally think that they're super important. I think that it's a way for people to give their opinion. If you think about it, not so much as a written down review, but just as a conversation between yourself and your social media community or your newspaper community or whatever, I think that there's an obligation if you write one review that you should be writing reviews of many things and that you should be inclusive of both positive and negative feedback. I also understand that, you know, there's a way to write a review without being snarky or condescending or cruel. And I think that that all that stuff, you don't need to do that. If you have a strong opinion about something, share your opinion. Your opinion should be strong enough to carry that. Here's what I want to commit to you guys about negative reviews, just because I think it's important for me to tell you and to make a stand about how I feel about it. And obviously that can change, and I'm open to hearing from all of you what you think. But here's how I feel after reading a lot of your feedback when I asked for it this weekend. So here are the things that I, Tracy, at The Stacks, I'm going to commit to you. One is that I'm going to commit to be respectful. People are creating art. They're writing books, whether I'm talking about a book or a movie or a musical or whatever. I'm going to commit to being respectful because I know that it's hard work to do it, and it's really easy to be snarky and dismissive, and I don't want to ever do that. I want to take someone's time and energy, and I want to treat it with the respect that it deserves. I'm also going to be honest. I think it's really important to be honest and thoughtful and to articulate exactly what it is that I didn't or did like about anything. And I think that that's sometimes where people run into issues, is that you're not articulate, and then it kind of just becomes, oh, the writing was bad. And that's not really helpful. So if I'm going to write these reviews, I want them to help you and explain to you, you know, my opinion of the book. And that's not to say that you won't love the book, but this is my opinion. It's my review. Another thing that I want to just, you know, commit to is that if it's something that has to do with the genre that I don't particularly love, I'll let you know. I will write in my review, or I will say, I'm not a big fan of young adult fiction. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt. And I think that that's totally fair. Another thing that I think is fair is that I'm going to commit to being truthful, just in the sense that if I put out 10 reviews and all of them say great things, how do you know what to believe? How do you know, when I'm being honest or not? If I will never write something that is not 100% true to me in that moment, whether I get a book for free, whether I get a book from a publisher or from a partner or something like that, any product I review, anything that I talk about, I promise to be honest with you guys. I will never tell you something's great when I think it's crap. I just won't do that. So I want you to know that you can trust my opinion. Now, you might not agree with my opinion, but that's on you. So that's kind of where I want to stop with this conversation. I'm super open to all of you, you know, commenting or messaging me on social media, on the website. The website is where you can find all of my reviews for every book I've read this year. It's www.thestackspodcast.com. On Instagram, Twitter, wherever, there are links to those accounts in the show notes. Please feel free to engage with me about this topic. I'm very interested in it because I am someone who's known to give a lukewarm review to something. So I'd love to hear what you guys think. This is going to be an ongoing conversation as I bring on more and more guests who are content creators themselves. And I just want to say again, I have the utmost respect for anybody who makes or creates anything. So all my reviews are coming from a place of critiquing the art, not the artist. Unless I think that the artist needs to be critiqued, but I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there. So that's it. We'll put a pin in this for now. There might be more follow-up on this next week. So yes, thank you guys so much for those of you who shared, who commented on your thoughts. I really appreciate it. This conversation is a big one, and I want to revisit it a lot. Okay, now on to the episode. This week, Lauren Finella is back. We're talking about Reincarnation Blues by Michael Poore. There are definitely spoilers this week, so if you don't want to be spoiled, don't listen. Read the book. Come back. The episode will still be here. That's it. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and please make sure to hit us up and let us know your thoughts on social media or wherever. All right, we are back this week with Lauren Finella, an important reader in the reader world. Important to me, important in my heart. And it's our Stacks Book Club episode. So we're talking about Reincarnation Blues by Michael Poore. This book is the story of Milo, or Milo. We can't agree, so we're going to call him both things. And he is a human being who is living his life and being reincarnated over almost 10,000 times. And it's his story of trying to find perfection and trying to find love. And his love interest just happens to be death herself, aka Susie. So that's a little bit about the book. We're going to dive in deeper. But before we do, I'm with Lauren. Hi, Lauren. Welcome back.
Hi.
Yay. Okay, we're going to talk about the book. We're just going to dive in. Oh, no, wait. We're not diving in. There are going to be a lot of spoilers in this book. This book is fiction, and we took the time to read the book, so we're going to talk about the whole thing. So if you haven't read it, if you think that you might be interested in this book, pause now. Go take your time. Read the book. This episode will be here. It's episode 16. It's waiting for you when you're ready. If you don't care and you just want to hear us talk about a book, let's go. All right, Lauren, what did you think of Reincarnation Blues?
So I liked this book. I was entertained the whole time I read it. I wasn't 100% in love with it. I think it was, I know we talked about this a little bit, but it was a little bit disjointed for me. It felt more like a collection of short stories than a novel, but I was entertained from beginning to end, I will say that. So those are kind of my initial thoughts when I finished the book. How about you?
I started the book and I was like 50 pages in and I was like, yo, I love this book. This book is so great. Like, this writing is like really cool and interesting. And I like the point of view of the author. I'm totally into it. And then at about page like 120, I was like, how come this book is so long? Like, what's next? And then towards the end, I was like, wait, I still like this book. So I would say if the book, I think, is like 370 pages. And if the book had been like 270 pages, I feel like I really would have liked it. But the middle kind of like lost me. It was a little disjointed. And I also have written down like in my notes, this could just be a collection of short stories with the same characters.
Right. I felt the same way. It could have been a little bit shorter, and that I liked how he had like short chapters, but the way he did that made it kind of feel more short story-ish, right? Because he titled the chapters and that was like the chapter was about the specific world, and that was kind of it in that world. So that's, I think, kind of reinforced that whole feeling more like short stories.
Totally. So just a little bit about the book in case you haven't read it or you don't remember it. You read it a while ago. The book is about Milo or Milo. I've been saying Milo. She was saying Milo. So now we're just saying both. I'll probably say Milo and she'll probably say Milo and just get over it. So Milo is a human who has lived for thousands and thousands of years. And every time he dies, he comes back in a different life. And the idea is that people are striving for perfection, and perfection kind of in air quotes, maybe, whatever the universe decides is perfection. So they use an example of this cow that commits suicide to feed a family in India. And so like that is this act of perfection. And they say it's perfection because it's neither, the cow is neither proud nor afraid. So it's like this ultimate sacrifice that doesn't serve the cow in any way. And like that's perfection. And this cow then when they die, they have this huge celebration and they go into a place called the Oversoul, which is like the most perfect place for this cow, essentially. Right?
Yeah. The Oversoul is full of joy and happiness, I think they describe it as. And something I thought that was interesting is when he first finds out that he dies and comes back, he thinks he has, they say, oh, you have thousands. But then when he is at, I believe, 9,994, his advisors, who we'll get into who they are too, but they are like, oh, just kidding. You actually only have 10,000. So you're going to be out of your lives.
So if you don't get to perfection, you end up going to nowhere, I believe is what they call it.
Yeah, sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's like a sidewalk with like nothing around
and
it.
And you just walk off to nothingness, apparently.
You're just alone, like, and no one finds you ever again. So if you take over 10,000 lives, once you get to 10,000 lives, you're done. You're a wash. So that kind of puts like a time constraint on the book, and it sets Milo up to be trying to find out how he can be perfect and achieve perfection so that he can go live in the Oversoul. But the other thing about Milo is that so everybody has a death, and death is like who comes and kills you. And so his death is this girl woman named Susie, and they fall in love. And so part of it is that he doesn't want to be without Susie, and how can he die and achieve perfection but still remain with Susie? So there's like kind of a love story, but it's more like they're partners. Like, I didn't really feel like they were in love so much as that, like, they loved each other.
Right. And I think she kind of says that being in love is a human thing, whereas for capital L love is a cosmic thing. And that's kind of what she was talking about. And I thought it was kind of interesting because on the synopsis, it kind of makes it sound like it's a love story. Mm-hmm. And it's really, for me, it wasn't a love story.
It's definitely more of like a journey finding oneself.
Yes.
And so what I really liked about the book is I felt like Michael Poor had a very clear, not agenda, because that kind of has a negative connotation, but he has very clear like political beliefs and views, I felt. And I thought he did he had really interesting ways of kind of telling us how he, like what he thinks the perfect world is, right? Because like that idea that the cow was neither proud nor afraid and that being part of their perfection is something that Michael Poor feels is perfection, right? Like that's his version of perfection. And throughout the book, he really is advocating for certain lifestyles or certain, you know, political beliefs. And that was what I think drew me into the book. Like I was interested in that.
Yeah, he's definitely making a social commentary about global warming, prison reform,
yeah,
just what is good and what is bad in general, I think. And
totally.
Just human nature, I think. He's really making commentary and just used this novel as a vehicle to express his views is kind of how I felt about it.
And I liked that.
Yeah, I liked that too, that he was, you know, knows what his point of view is and is, you know, knows how to express it.
And it didn't feel preachy, which I liked. Like it felt almost creative.
Yeah, it kind of sneaks in there almost. If you're not really closely paying attention to it, you might not even fully pick up on all of the commentary he's making.
Some of them are really obvious. Like there's a whole section about prison and it's basically just like a whole life about prison reform and like what if we treated prisoners humanely? Like what would their potential be essentially? And so that one I was like, this is very clearly like social commentary. But then, you know, there's moments where he just like, there was one part that I really liked. He talks about crypto economics and he says that crypto economics is like cryptozoology, which is the study of animals that don't exist. So like the Loch Ness Monster or Bigfoot. And then he says, and I'm reading directly, he says, oh no, I'm not reading directly. I'm not reading this directly because I didn't quote this part. But basically he says the study of economics that aren't real is crypto economics. And he uses the example of people who believe that if you take away taxes and you make rich people richer, that somehow that's going to help out poor people. And then he says that's the economic version of Bigfoot. Which is just like the way that he ties in his political beliefs with kind of this casual, like, that's Bigfoot, is what I thought really worked. Because he makes a statement, but then he also kind of like flows it around the tone of the book.
Right. Makes it kind of into that magical realism world that he's doing a metaphor basically for that.
And I feel like a lot of the times in books, like where you're getting people's like political beliefs, it's much more clear or it's nonfiction.
Right. It's either a fiction that's just trying to force an opinion down your throat or nonfiction, which, you know, a lot of those, that's the point is to express their opinion on something. But yeah, it didn't really feel overly preachy to me either that, oh, you need to believe this. And
right. It was more nuanced.
It was more nuanced. And also I think the fact that he used this, I don't know if we consider this book science fiction. I think it is kind of science fiction, magical realism.
Sure.
But I think using that world allowed him to not feel so preachy because we don't get to die a thousand times, you know.
Right.
So it's like, you know, putting it in a different world, I think, allowed you to kind of feel more open to
it. Totally. And he presents Milo to us as like this really wise person because Milo has lived so many lives. And so I feel like that's also part of it. Like a lot of the things that he says are reflections that Milo's had or observations or things that Milo comes to. So it's kind of wrapped in like, this is just someone's opinion and it's not like an opinion that Michael Poor has researched and has decided this is the fact. Like, so it's more approachable.
Yeah. And actually you mentioned how Milo's very wise. I thought it was kind of interesting how I forget who said it, but someone said, you know, being wise isn't the same thing as achieving perfection. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was super interesting, you know, because just because someone's really intelligent and smart doesn't necessarily mean, I don't know if they're saying mean they're a good person or not, but just that that's not what perfection is in this world.
Right.
It's, you know, the self-sacrifice and,
right,
you know, the humility.
Right. And like the love, like, mm-hmm, you can have learned a lot of things and understand a lot of things without actually ever having to like give of yourself is
exactly
kind of how I interpreted that.
Yeah, definitely.
Because the part of perfection, aside from the cow example, they also talk about like capital L love, and they talk about learning and like teaching, and that being another way you can get to perfection. But all of those things really have to do with the person sacrificing or giving or being available and vulnerable for other humans. And you could be wise and never do that.
Exactly. So I thought that was,
yeah,
you know, really interesting, because,
yeah,
a lot of people value, you know, intellectual ability,
right,
which, you know, I do value, but there's more to life, I think, is,
right,
kind of what he was getting at.
Right, right,
so,
exactly. Totally.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I also, well, I guess, what did you think of the personification of death? Like, how did you feel about Susie,
yeah,
being
a
character?
I kind of was thinking, do I feel like death is always personified as a woman? I feel like that's a really common thing.
Is death a woman in The Book Thief? Did you read The Book Thief?
Yes, I did. But I don't know if they give a gender to it. But I liked that she was, as death, was pretty empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
That story with the whale and how she didn't want the whale to die. I thought that it was, you know, showing that death knows no limitations, you know, like it's, everyone's going to experience death.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, it might be not the person, people think it might not be their time and whatnot.
Right.
So, and I thought it was just how she I thought it was interesting how she wanted to open a candle shop and,
yeah,
stuff and still have her own personality, because she didn't like being the thing that, the last thing people see before they die, and see people in these horrible situations.
Right.
So I think just seeing her, I really liked her actually as a character.
Too.
I think she might've been my favorite character in
I
the
think
book
so too.
Because I think she had a lot of nuance to her.
And she like felt sad about killing people.
Exactly. Like she didn't enjoy it. And where I feel like a lot of times in movies and stuff, death personified likes it, and it's just this evil, sadistic,
right,
being. But she was not like that.
Well, she wanted out. She didn't want to do it anymore. It was like it was too much of a toll on her. There was like a school fire, and they talk about how she was like really sad after that. And I was like, yeah, that would be really freaking hard,
yeah,
to have to kill a bunch of children. I liked it too. I wasn't sure I was going to. There's a line. I guess I really liked the writing of this book, like the way that wrote, but he has a line where he talks about Milo goes like with death to go see perfection, to go see the cow, and he says flying with death was like being in a sleeping bag with a sensuous woman and a tarantula. And I was like, this is so great. And that was like early in the book, that's page 58, and I was like, I love this book.
Yeah, I remember that line being
so
like
good.
I don't even know how he came up with that,
I had
but
to
I
reread
like it.
It I was like, wait, a what? I was like, ooh, sure.
Sure. I don't know,
yeah,
but I'm willing to find out.
Yes, that's exactly what I was like, yeah, that's like, I could feel how death might feel like that.
Yeah.
Like flying with death might feel like that. Were there any lives that particularly stuck out to you of Milo's that you loved or didn't love?
I get why this life, I think, was important to the story, but I didn't really like it as much, was the one, it was in the future and he built the palace on the sun and he was just this horrible rich person and he wanted to take this woman's artificial virginity.
Yes.
And she ended up sending a robot and they gave him a plaque that said he's taken the virginity, and then the palace blew up and,
right,
then he came back, I think, as a, it was like a cockroach or a beetle,
yeah,
a bug
yeah,
in his next life. That one was like, oh, yikes. But I get why it was necessary for his development,
right,
as a character. I thought the one about the prison where he gets sent to prison, I think the prison's called Unfirth the Planet, was really interesting. He, you know, gets falsely accused of sexually assaulting a girl. And so in this world, you get sent to a planet where you're just there for forever. And the way it was just kind of showing how society kind of like treats their
as soon as he got there he got beat up and raped
and raped, and then he got like, basically he was owned by someone essentially, and then they would like
pimp him out
whore him out to other prisoners. And then he had this unique ability to be able to go out in space without a spacesuit, I think it was,
right.
And so then he was super valuable, but he found out he also was able to heal people's minds, and so people were more compassionate, and then they were able to build this community. And I thought that was a really cool idea, and so I really liked that one a lot. How about you? What were your
I liked that one a lot, because that also touches on that whole like political like agenda, not agenda, but the political point of view of the author, which I really liked, because it's saying like, what if we took the time to heal these people who are in jail, who are our criminals? And there is, this is not in this section, but there is this really great part. It's in chapter 9, which I know off the top of my head because in the acknowledgments, which I loved, they're really good. If you didn't read them, you should check them out. He talked about how he got the idea from Alice Walker. Alice Walker had an article or a short story. It's called Sent by Earth, a message from the grandmother spirit after the bombing of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And they talk about a tribe in Africa where when people commit crimes, instead of the trial being like a running through of what happened and a condemnation of the person, the whole town gets together and they talk about how all the things that that person had done that was positive and all the love that they had shared. And it was stuff like, when I was hungry, you gave me a piece of bread. When my mom fell and twisted her ankle, you helped her cross the street, whatever it is. But that's how they have their criminal justice system. And, you know, that was very early on in the book. So then when we got to Unfirth and we got to this world where he was healing people, I really liked that. I was like, oh, this is something that's important to, you know, perfection or to a better life. It's like that you're healing those that you come in contact with. You're not, you know, fighting back. Like, because the other option is that Milo gets raped and is abused and is forced to do all these activities, and then he gets meaner and tougher. And instead, he heals people. Like, instead, he figures out that his way out is healing people. And then when he gets taken off the planet, he goes into this deep depression because he can't do that anymore.
Right. And I think he actually used it as a point that he was in prison wrongfully, too, as part of his statement, because that is a major issue in our country where people are wrongfully incarcerated, and then the effects that can have on their mental and physical well-being after, even when they are exonerated. So I think he kind of did that intentionally.
Totally.
Too.
I didn't even think of that, but you're right. Yeah. And there's definitely like, there's the aftermath, and he ends up committing suicide, and that's why he doesn't end up achieving perfection in that life, because he is unable to like kind of to continue the work that he was doing or whatever. But so I did like that life. The other life I really liked was the last life. So, well, some of the lives are in the future and some of the lives are in the past, which I also thought was cool. And like the lives that were in the future reference things that happened in previous lives, like the comment or whatever. But in this last life, he is in a space shuttle, and then his dad is killed for like standing up to power. And then him, his mother, and his twin siblings are sent to this like island moon of Jupiter. This is the science fiction part. When you say it out loud, it sounds fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel crazy when I was reading it.
Exactly. That's why I was like, yeah, that was what it was.
It was weird. It was an island on the moon Europa of Jupiter. Why not? Because they had come from Ganymede, the other moon, one of the other moons. Anyways, and they were like a slave people. They were like forced to do work for the monitors, who were like bad guys, and like they all had crazy funny names because someone had an ancient book called I Want My MTV,
yes,
and it was about like the 2000s, and there's like references to like
the Spice Girls, like someone's named Posh and someone's named Chili, which I have to think is for TLC. And someone is named Old Deuteronomy, which I don't know if you know this reference, but that's the old, one of the old cats in the musical Cats.
I do know that reference.
Okay.
But I actually didn't think about it until you just said it. And I was like, wait, I know where this is going.
There's also a Jenna Dots, which is Jenny Annie Dots in Cats. It's like, oh, another reference to Cats. It's the one who, like, also... My musical theater nerd is showing right now, but I don't care because I love Cats. Get off me. Don't at me.
I've actually never seen it, but I'm seeing it next year and I'm very excited.
I'm so jealous.
Everyone's like, why are you so excited to see Cats? I'm like, have you heard the music?
Cats,
like,
is amazing. Wait till you see Magical Mr. Mistopheles do his dance number. It is to die for.
It's going
to
be here next year. That's why I'm seeing
it. Oh, well, yes. Can I come?
Yeah, you should.
So we'll be here next year talking about Cats on the Stacks. But anyways, so there's like this really cool world and they're like forced to do all this terrible stuff for these bad guys. And then basically like how he achieves perfection is he tells everybody this, it's called the parable of Jonathan Yahya. And it's essentially this guy, Jonathan Yahya, is scared to do everything. And then he dies. And death is like, I'll let you go back. I'm going to do this really nice thing for you. And I'm also going to do this really cruel thing for you. And the nice thing is that I'm going to let you go back and live one life. And the cruel thing is that I'm going to let you go back and live one day. And the cruel thing is that I'm going to let you go back and live one day. So he goes back and he like tells the bully, like, go fuck yourself. He tells the woman that he always loved. He like kisses her. And then he realizes like, it's not so bad.
Yeah. And he quits his job that he hates and gets a new job.
Yeah, and he goes and gets a new job and he realizes like his life could have been so much more if he wasn't scared of everything. So then Milo comes back to all the people and he's like, look, we're already dead. Like we're already, if these people want to kill us, they can kill us. Like if they want to abuse us, they can abuse us. But if we don't do what they say, if we stand up for ourselves, if we don't allow ourselves to be bullied anymore, like we could change the universe that we live in. And so then the people on the island, all the MTV lovers, they're like, fuck it. We're just going to say no to these bad guys. And they do. And the world does end. They all die, basically. But they broadcast their message to the world. It's very Twitter, very social media activist. They've broadcast a video of it to the other people in like the Jupiter moon galaxy. And it's just, and that's how he achieves his perfection, that he empowers people. And they say, in the book, they say here, this is actually a quote this time. The moral of the Jonathan Yahya parable is, if everyone agreed to suffer pain or death rather than be treated unjustly, greedy people could never again gain power, which is essentially, I'm going to venture to guess, something that Michael Poore feels very strongly about, because that is kind of all the things he talks about boil down to, like, you don't get abused, if you don't allow yourself to be walked over, if you stand up for yourself and the people around you, if you sacrifice yourself as the cow, whatever it is, that you are, you know, enabling the world to be better in the future, kind of. So I really liked that. I thought it was cool. I thought the world was interesting. It had humor and some real tragedy. The twins.
Yeah. And how they made them torture each other, like,
but it was, they made them have sex with each other.
Yeah, that part was
really
sad. Yeah, that was sad. Which one did you like least?
Fuck, I don't know. I didn't like, this wasn't technically a life, this was in the afterlife or the middle or whatever they called it, where he was like with the camel juggler guy and was like trying to juggle water. I just was like, this could have been cut. This is where the book dragged. That was where the book dragged.
Yeah, I didn't really see the full point of that story.
Right. I think it was something along the lines of, like, you shouldn't waste your time trying to do the perfect thing that's impossible, which is, like, juggle water.
Yeah. And then remember how he thought he was juggling babies for a second? And then they're really dolls.
Yeah. The thing about the book that I did like is that it had a lot of humor in it.
It did. Like, it was, like, just kidding.
Yeah, it was, like, funny, weird, like, kind of cheeky. And so when things didn't always work, there was always something that I was like, about. Like, I was like, that's interesting. Like, he mixed in things that I didn't care about with things that I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So I did that life, I don't know. That life was like the least favorite. Mm-hmm. I actually liked his first life where he was like the little guy who didn't grow.
I liked that one too. And they threw him like as a ball and
to try to cross the ravine, but he ended up dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was like Milo. It was some Greek name, super Greek sounding name.
I like that. I also liked how he was went to different places and different countries, and he lived lives all over the world, and it wasn't just like this like white guy.
Right. Life. He was even a woman in some of the
woman sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
And animals.
Yeah, also him and Death were like women sometimes, and I think that was also why I didn't really feel like it was a, you know, traditional love heterosexual relationship. I don't even think it was really always a like sexual relationship between them, because he said at the end that they came back sometimes as sisters and all these different sort of, or like I think there were animals that they came back as. So I think it was just about a different kind of love that they were.
Yeah.
The cosmic love.
Sure. And I also, it dawned on me after I finished the book, I was like, oh, they were soulmates.
Oh.
I know, right? I feel like that was the whole point, right? Like,
yeah, because their souls, really. They weren't like, she wasn't human.
Right. And like,
it was his soul
that kept coming back and was like connected to her. Of course, I was like, oh, they're soulmates. I get it. The like I like think so hard about the book. I'm like, ooh, what can I take from this? What can we talk about on the podcast? And then I'm like, oh, they're soulmates.
Me
you
too.
Idiot.
Oh, like the most basic.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, his name was Milo. Cool. Got it. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
But yeah, the book, yes, the cosmic love, everything was like bigger than, which I liked because you can make things heightened when you're talking about the afterlife. But I have a question that I did not understand. I really hope that you understood.
Okay.
Why did Nan or Nan have so many cats?
I don't know. Were they supposed to represent something? It was just supposed to be funny. Like, oh, ha-ha, she has a bunch of cats.
Well, I thought maybe because, like, so they say that in the, like, afterlife, everything is, like, the epitome of that thing, like, the most pure version. So, like,
right. So,
yeah. So she was, like, a cat lady.
The purest cat lady?
So that's why she had, like, so many cats and she, like, Wheel of Fortune and, like, I don't
know. Yeah, she's like, what was that line about the canceled TV show?
I don't remember.
It was the name of one of the chapters.
Oh, I don't remember.
And she said it.
She was like, oh, that show's been canceled or something.
She said your soul can be like a canceled TV show.
Yes. Yeah. She was like a total like cat. I guess that's what it was. Like she was like the epitome of a cat woman. But she was like the meaner one. Mama was the nicer one, right?
Yeah.
I kind of got them confused in my head.
Was it Nan or Nana?
I think it was Nan.
Nan? Yeah, she was kind of the buzzkill, like, not so fast.
Yeah, and then nice. Like, Mama would be like, you did really good. And she's like, you did fine. Yeah. But you didn't do
like
perfect.
Like, 3 stars.
Yeah. She's like my book reviews. 3 stars. Sorry. It was fiction. It was just okay.
It was just fine.
It was fine. Like, not everything's 5 stars, people. Yeah. Some things are 2, and some things are 1. Did you like the ending? What did you think of them achieving perfection and like going?
I did like the way that they achieved perfection. I thought that was really great because I kind of wasn't sure how he was going to have them do it because there were some parts where I was like, that was pretty good. Like I was a little bit surprised that that wasn't good enough, but I really liked the way they did. And also just how it went through the last chapter was just a bunch of different lives that him and Susie had together. Right. And there was one that was kind of a continuous, I think it was in the early, it was like late 1800s in Michigan, early 1900s. Yeah. And that was kind of sweet. And the last line was really funny to me because I kind of was like, oh, that's how we're ending this book, because he was trying to tell Susie, I'm proud of you. And they were really old at this point and she didn't really hear him. And he said it again. And then she said, I'm tired of you too. And that was how it ended. And that was just kind of funny to me.
It was like kind of weird, but also like, I feel like it makes sense.
Yeah. It kind of made sense with the tone of the book.
Yeah.
So.
It felt right.
Yeah.
But it was also like, that's how, like, yeah, I guess also, that's perfection though, right? Like,
yeah.
Isn't that sometimes how it goes?
Did you feel about it?
So, okay. I don't know if I fully understood it, which this happens to me a lot. People are like, oh, I love the ending. And I'm like, I don't get it. I think, this is what I took from it. You tell me if this sounds at all like what you saw. They achieve perfection.
Mm-hmm.
They go into the Oversoul together. And so they become like souls connected forever. So every life, like I guess they still have to keep coming back as lives. That's what I was confused with. I just thought they would stay in the Oversoul.
That's what I thought
too. The long continuous life was in the Oversoul. That was their life. But I thought that they were still, like, being reincarnated.
Right. And I guess my question was, when you go to the Oversoul, like, do you have a choice to, like, keep going back? Is that what they were choosing
to do? That's
what
I didn't understand.
And that's why I was a little bit confused about.
Right.
Because I thought once they went in there, they were just in there. And so, yeah, it was a little bit when they were talking about all those different lives. I'm like, is this before the but I didn't think it was before the Oversoul.
Well, I thought
it was
could
after.
Have been together before the Oversoul because he only had that one life left.
Exactly.
And
that's right.
Was
so
death. So yeah, that's what I didn't understand.
Yeah.
I liked the life that they lived together. I wasn't wild about the fact that Susie ran a gun shop. I really would have liked her to have her candle shop.
Yeah, I kind of was like, that's random. And I thought it would have been a nice tie-in to have the candle shop.
But maybe it was because she was death, so they were trying to show like, I don't know.
Maybe it was
commentary. I don't know. I was like, really? Okay, I guess.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit out of the character and context of the book.
Sure.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I was like, a gun shop? I don't know. Okay. The Buddha life.
Yeah.
Did you think that killing Buddha was an act of perfection or no? Demented Buddha.
I kind of thought it was a little bit.
Too.
Like, I kind of was like, I think it is. And that's why I was kind of surprised, because I think he really felt like he wasn't doing it for, you know, pride, and because that was a huge thing that you can't achieve it if you're doing it for that. So I kind of thought he was. It was. And so that's why I was kind of surprised when they said it wasn't. What did you think? You thought it was?
I thought so too. I thought like he was trying to make it so that Buddha like wasn't embarrassing himself.
Right.
When he would like travel to the towns and he could tell that he was like in, he was suffering, not understanding what was going on. I also liked how the same poison that he poisoned Buddha with ended up poisoning him and his friend. I was like, that's great. That was like, I those moments, those kind of like tongue in cheek moments through the books, those are the ones where I was like, yeah, sure, I got it. But I definitely, I thought it was, I mean, I knew that it wasn't when I was reading it because I saw how much of the book was left, but I thought that it was based on the definition, like that he had killed this like perfect human. I also loved that in that life, them talking about how meditation is just like whatever.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I pretend to try to meditate and I'm like, I can't do it. I'm thinking about my toenail polish.
Yeah. Didn't they say they were thinking about like cats or
cats.
Something?
Yeah. Cats. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I can't really meditate either. I always just start thinking about stuff. Right. But yeah, it was, I mean, it was it not because he was a perfect human, but would a, I don't know, like what,
like
a perfect,
if he had killed a non-perfect perfect person,
human, if he wasn't perfect and he had done it, would it have counted? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, like in the end, Mom is like, I got it. I understood the Buddha thing.
Right. So they didn't at first, and so now they do, and they're like, oh, we should have just let you do
I
it.
I honestly have no, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was perfect. I understood that it was perfect when he was doing it. I was like, oh, this is the perfect thing. I get it. But clearly they didn't feel that way about him and it.
Right. So I thought it was interesting that they kind of admitted they made a mistake about it, though. And
like
it
that.
Is kind of interesting that, like, I know we were kind of talking about who are Mama and Nan exactly. Like, are they advisors, part of the universe? But that they're the ones, are they the ones that got to decide that? Or was it the
I think
universe
it's the
itself?
Universe, because they always said 2 and 2 equals 4.
Right.
So, like, they're
so
not
it's
in control.
The universe, so. Yeah.
So maybe the universe still didn't think it was perfect, but Mama was just saying, like, I get what you were trying to do.
Right. They knew the intention of it.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't, I guess, what they were looking for.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought, I mean, I liked that it was, like, kind of controversial because it was like, wow, do I think that's perfect or I think that's bad? But I also think we as a people now understand who Buddha is, right? But, like, that was in the BC era. It was, like, 5,000 BC. So in that moment, Buddha could have just been, like, another cult leader, you know?
Right.
Like, he didn't really – he knew that Buddha was perfect. Like, he could see his perfection, and he talked about it. He's like, he's perfect. But – he was perfect because he was wise and also present in the moment. And, like, that was kind of what Milo thought made him perfect.
Right. I don't know if this is too much of a reach, but do you think he's making commentary about physician-assisted suicide at all? Because
maybe.
Of, like, how people
well, yeah,
start,
I definitely
like,
think,
being, like, if there's a tie into that. And I only think of that because of how much the
other
stuff
is
in there, too, and it's political.
Well, like, allowing people to die with dignity.
Yeah, like, that whole... Not necessarily, you know, physician assisted, but the whole dying with dignity and, you know,
choosing,
retaining your pride and your reputation, I guess.
Sure.
Too.
Well, it was definitely to preserve his reputation because he was like, if he keeps going around and he's demented, like, he's gonna embarrass himself and people are gonna see him as like sub optimal Buddha and they're going to realize that he's only human and it's going to take away from all of his teachings and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So he was helping the greater good essentially.
So that's why I think it's perfect.
Ditto.
Perfection. What did you think of the title?
I think the title is like fine. I mean it is basically what the book is.
Did you think blues was color or like music? Like what did you think?
Blues I thought was sadness. Okay. Like before going into it because I kind of felt like, oh, you're gonna die and come back to life again. That's kind of sad.
Okay.
But kind of now thinking about it, it's not necessarily about Milo himself. I think it's about just the universe and the world. And he was kind of, you know, all the things he's talking about how there was a lot about how the humans were treating Earth and how Earth was gone and all that. So there was a lot about, he was definitely making a point about global warming and whatnot. And so I think he's referring to the blues is the sadness of the human race, I think, sure. in general, and just the problems our society is facing.
That's good. Yeah. That's really good. I like that.
How about you?
I kind of just thought about it more like, I thought about like the music, like the blues, uh-huh. where it's kind of just like this like genre of like sadness. But beautiful. Blues music is beautiful, mm-hmm. but like the sadness is kind of what drives it, like the darkness. So it's kind of like, I sing the reincarnation blues, yeah. you know, like, I don't know. That's like kind of how I had it in my mind when I picked up the book. I don't know. I'm sure there are a million other titles he could have gone with. Uh-huh. So, I would be so curious to think, like, I would love to talk to him because I feel like I would have so many questions for him about like why and how he did what he did.
Exactly. And his intent. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because I feel like also a lot of people, when I posted that we were going to do this book on the show, a lot of people reached out and were like, oh my God, I loved it. I cried so hard. And then a lot of people were like, that book was not good. Mm-hmm. And usually when I post a book, I get very clear feedback from people who have read it, either that it's good or not. And this book was one of the first ones where I got like, both very sides. Strong, like mixed, and it's still not a book that a lot of people have read. So I was kind of interested in that. And I understand people who didn't like the book. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I understood the book enough to love the book.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I can see why people wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
I can, but I don't think I fully have understand to like love it.
Right.
I mean, I did like it. It was entertaining and I liked what he had to say.
Yes. I was
it just
more
was presented in a way that I'm not really used to because I don't really read
like
these
this.
Kinds of fiction books.
Yeah.
Like I don't really read science fiction, mm-hmm. but it was interesting and I'm glad I read it though.
Yeah. I really liked Michael Poore. I liked his point of view. I liked his opinions on society a lot. Like mm-hmm. for that stuff, this book was 5 stars to me, but the actual story itself, like everything altogether, was probably only 3 stars. But I feel like I got a lot of perspective and interesting thoughts and ideas, and like I want to go read that Alice Walker short stories that he credits for the love trials.
Yeah, I do too. I didn't know that. I hadn't read the acknowledgments actually.
It'll be so in the show notes, links to it, everybody.
I'm glad you told me that because I do want to read that. That sounds super
interesting. It sounds really cool. But so the book was, I don't know, people who loved the book. What I'm trying to say is those of you who read the book and loved it, will you message me and Lauren? You can group message us on Instagram. I'm at the Stacks Pod. She's at literary Lauren_. And just tell us what you loved about the book. I think we're both really curious. If this book was like a 5-star for you, and there's someone I'm speaking to specifically, and you know who you are, I'm going to message you later. I want to know what it was that you loved, and not that you should feel weird about it. I'm curious because I feel like I understand loving this book. I just don't think I quite understood it enough to get myself there. Does
yeah.
that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense because I feel pretty much the same way.
Right.
Because, yeah, I had heard some people cried at the end and I pretty easy cry at a book.
Okay.
And I didn't. So I was like, am I missing something?
Yeah.
So I'm definitely really curious.
I'm so curious
about the people who
really loved it, like that it really hit a nerve with you.
Yeah.
And not that you have to like defend yourself or anything, you know, I don't care what people like and don't like. I'm just curious what worked, and maybe some of you could also explain the ending to us just in case. And Michael Poore, if you're listening, you could also explain the ending, or you could come on the podcast and talk about it, you know, whatever. It's an open invitation. I know what I do want to talk about. So there's like 500,000 characters in this book, but there's basically 4 main characters: Milo, Susie, Nan, and Mama. First of all, do you think this book would make a good movie or TV show?
I feel like it could make a good TV show just because of the different lives. And mm-hmm. I feel like they could expand on each one mm-hmm. and it would just make more sense probably to a viewer because a lot of viewers like haven't necessarily read the book. So
right.
I feel like probably TV show is the best avenue for it. Yeah. How about you?
I think TV show. I was thinking kind of between like, would each life, like the last 6 lives, would each of those be their own like season, or mm-hmm. would you do each episode was a life kind of thing?
Right. You could go either way, like a limited series or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think it would be good. Do you know what movie it kind of reminded me of is Big Fish. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of, I mean, like the con, like the insides of it, the story are not the same, but like kind of the fantastical, magical realism kind of, like, I kept thinking like this is kind of Big Fish like. But, you know, I don't know. It's just because it's like weird and different. I've never read anything like this before. So
I haven't really either.
No, because I've read some like science fiction, some magical realism, but this was like cool, weird, interesting, political magical realism. Do you have people that you would cast in this?
I was, you know, thinking, who would I cast for Milo? And I really kind of like couldn't think of anyone at first, but like maybe like a Joaquin Phoenix or something.
Oh, so you have him older.
I have him older, but it's hard because the age changes so much. So like I don't really know what age.
Right.
I feel like if it was a TV show, for instance, they'd probably have to get multiple people.
So you have him kind of more brooding.
Yeah.
Like a little darker, a little more troubled.
Yeah.
That's I have a few people because I like as I was reading, I was thinking about it. So I had Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay, I could see
but
that.
But he's like a little more optimistic, like curious, like puppy dog. And then I also had for my older kind of version of Milo, not the same one, but just like older, I had John Cusack, who's like kind of like a disheveled kind of guy, you know? Like I kind of had that. And then I also had Dev Patel.
Okay.
Because I kind of like the idea of him being like a little more ethnic.
Yeah.
Because he lived in so like
so many different
so long ago. So like there weren't there weren't like white people, just like European people in 5000 BC. Right? And like also in the future, I imagine that, you know, there's going to be more shades of human, not less.
Exactly.
So I kind of like the idea of like him or like a Jesse Williams, like someone who's like just like a brown person. I just thought that that kind of like felt because you could fit in so many different worlds that way.
Exactly.
Like what is Joaquin Phoenix doing in Africa? Like in an African village. You know what I mean though?
But I guess you're right. I didn't think about
color.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah. I could see someone like Jesse, well, you know, who they can, you know, make it makes sense for him to be anywhere essentially.
But
like,
then also maybe if it's just your soul, every season in every life is a different actor.
That's kind of what I was, it would be someone different. Cause there was like the one where he's on the sun and he's kind of, I kind of pictured like Matthew McConaughey in that
one. Yeah.
But not in like other ones, you know?
Oh, that's
so like
true.
Joaquin Phoenix, I kind of pictured in some of those.
Like the Buddha one.
Yeah.
Or like the juggler one.
Yeah. Where he's a little more, you know, off the map, beaten road kind of thing.
So like maybe you have one actor who plays afterlife.
Yeah.
Him.
Who represents his soul.
Who represents his soul. And then every other life, it's just like a different person. So when he's in India, he's Indian.
Yeah,
when he's in, he's in Vienna and he gets catapulted, he's like a white blonde guy or whatever. Yeah. I never really thought about that, but that's kind of good. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about Susie? I had a lot of Susies. Do you have any Susies?
I didn't really think about who I would – who's yours? And maybe I'll think about it while you answer.
So as long as we don't cast Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Milo, I also had Zooey Deschanel as Susie. But they can't do it again because they did 500 Days of Summer. So.
Yeah.
But I also – okay. So I also had Zoe Kravitz.
Oh, yes. I love her.
And then I also had Lupita Nyong'o.
She would be fabulous.
Wouldn't she be
great? When is she not?
When has she ever been bad in anything? And then I also had – do you know, do you ever watch Orange is the New Black?
Yes.
Do you know who Jackie Cruz is? She plays Flaca. She's like kind of like the, you know, the two pretty girls, Latina, who are like.
Is she the taller one? She's a little bit taller.
The one with the bangs.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I kind of had her because she's kind of like weird, funny, serious, tough, soft. I don't know. I just really like her. And I thought that would be kind of a cool Susie because Susie has contained so much. Like she's compassionate, but she's also tough and she's like doesn't like to take shit from people. But I don't know. I just I was like, Jackie Cruz would be good. So those are some of mine.
Oh, I think Zoe Kravitz is a really good choice because I kind of picture, someone who's just very ethereal, like a little bit, you know, and but she's, you know, not super, you know, she has dimensions to her.
Right.
You know, she's super dimensional. So I think she could play a lot of that really well. So I think she would be good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then I mean, I like really got into this as I was reading the book. So I have like lots. Okay. I'll just tell you mine and then you tell me if you have any for yours because I clearly prepared for this assignment because I knew I was wanting to talk about it. For Mama, I had Gina Davis.
Oh, okay.
because she's like, Mama is like the more loving one. And I just love Gina Davis. But I also had Tracee Ellis Ross from Blackish. Oh, yes.
She would be great.
Wouldn't she be good? And then for Non.
She's funny too.
Because she's funny and she's like maternal. But then for Non, I had Sandra Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's like kind of like the meaner one. I also had Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh.
Because I wasn't quite sure how to place people. Uh-huh. But I kind of thought like if you had like Whoopi Goldberg and like Sally Field as like Mama and Non, like, I don't know. Uh-huh. Can you see Whoopi Goldberg with like thousands of cats like wearing her like big baggy loose clothes and just being like, ugh, get out of here.
Yeah, that would be good.
Did you have anybody?
I kind of think for Mama, maybe Octavia Spencer would be a good choice too. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, so, but yeah, Non's hard with all the cats.
Yeah, because she has to be like kind of weird and also, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Just, you know, wanting her.
Yeah. And then there's all the like bazillion other characters, which like that would make for a good TV show too. Because right. You could have so many cameos.
And you could develop them more. And
who's
whatnot.
Making this into a TV show? We want to see it. We think you could do a good job, people.
Yeah.
Michael Poore, let us be your agent. We'll help you. We'll get this made. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about the book? Anything else you want to say?
I don't really think so. But yeah, I definitely would like to see an adaptation because I think with all the magical qualities in it that it could be, and it could have a point to, you know, point of view, and it could be really cool.
It could be really cool. While I didn't love this book, like it's not the best book I read this year for me, I do weirdly encourage people to check it out.
Yes.
Because it's a pretty easy read. It's not short, but it's not, I mean, it's 370 pages, but they're big pages. It's a hardback still. And it's interesting and it does make you think even if you don't feel it. So
Yeah, it's a quick read. It's engaging. Yeah. Like, I don't think you would really regret reading
Yeah, I know
this.
Some people didn't like it, but obviously some people are not going to like everything. So
exactly.
I feel like it would be a cool read for you. If you've gotten this far and you haven't read it, you're not going to read it because we just spoiled the entire book. But I warned you in the beginning. Okay, everybody, that's it. Lauren, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so happy. You can find, I'm going to post where you can find Lauren on social media, where you can find us. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, rate and review, you know, all that good stuff. It really goes a long way. So if you'll take 30 seconds right now, just rate and review this show if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Okay, that's everything. Thank you so much. And we will see you guys in the stacks. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to our guest, Lauren Finella. Please make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to this show. If you're interested in contributing to what we're doing here, go to patreon.com/thestacks. We greatly appreciate anything you can contribute to making this show a reality. Thank you to our graphic designer, Robin McCright. Thank you to our theme music from Tagirgis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.